Pete Sampras joins us on Sports Byline, the all-time leader in Grand Slam singles titles, of course. And Pete, when I saw you walk off the court back in 2002, having captured your fifth U.S. Open championship, I thought to myself, this is a person that's going to be very comfortable getting on with his life. And I really feel that that was something that you had come to terms with. Was I correct in that observation?
You know, after the fact, and a few months after the Open, I felt vindicated with all the negative stuff kind of going through those 2 years of not winning. I feel like it was kind of the lowest point. It was when I lost at Wimbledon that year, and to kind of come back and win that Open, it just took a lot out of me. And 2 months after the win, I kind of asked myself, what's next? You know, is it, you want to get ready for Australia, you get play, keep on going. And I think for the first time in my career, I was really content and felt like I've given everything I have and I have nothing left in the tank. And that's when I knew it was pretty close to being over. I just wanted to give myself the time to make sure I was 100% done. And once Wimbledon came and went, I just knew that it was time for me to retire, because if that tournament didn't get my juices going, then it was time to move on. But retirement is a process. It isn't something that you wake up and say, I'm just going to retire. I mean, it took me a while to kind of, you know, really, really come to grip with retirement. And but it was the right time for me. It was a great way to go out. And you know, before the Open, I didn't know what was in store for me in the next 6-8 months. But after the Open, it was pretty much it for my career.
Pete, is there an ongoing battle between highly skilled professional athletes between what their body tells them and what their mind tells them as far as retirement?
Yeah, it's a tricky one, because the easy part is the playing. The hard part is the training, the preparation, the work, the running, the weight room. I mean, that's the grinding stuff is the hardest part. You know, playing with John Elway today in this golf tournament, he totally agreed when he came to his season. I mean, that spring training or that boot camp was hard for him. And for me, it was a grind. And I've been playing the game since I was 8 and turned pro at 17. So I've been out there 15, 16 years. And a lot of international traveling, and it took its toll on me. And I, you know, body held up pretty good. You know, mentally, I, you know, stressed myself out a lot, trying to stay on top of the game. And I think put all that in the blender, and it's just eventually it's just going to take its toll. But I wasn't going to continue to play after the Open just to make a few more bucks and just to kind of say farewell. I played a win, and once it wasn't in my heart anymore, I knew it was time to move on.
Pete, one of the things that all athletes tell me is that the successful ones are those that are being able to stay even keeled when they're playing. Baseball players, you go 0 for 4 or 4 for 4, and you got to remember both, I suppose. In the sport of tennis, and your personality was always very even keeled, was this as easy as it appeared to be, or did you have to work at staying emotionally even keeled?
You know, it's just my personality. I don't get too high when I win. I don't get too low when I lose. Actually, I do get pretty low when I lose. It doesn't feel that good. I'm sorry, someone's saying to me, so I'm sorry about that. You know, I lost my train of thought.
About being even keeled.
Oh, yeah. And I think just with being even keeled, it helped me deal with staying on top of the game. You know, that's why I look at someone like Federer, who's a lot of similar to me. I think we'll have an easier time staying on top of the game, where someone like a McEnroe, who is a little bit temperamental and up and down, it's like, you know, it was an exhausting week when he played because he was so emotional. Whereas me, I was, you know, pretty even keeled and kind of pretty consistent. I think that helped me stay on top, was just having that kind of low key, didn't really say or do too much, and just kind of played my tennis. And I just kept things simple, focused on winning, and you know, that was my priority every time I stepped out there.
I know Pete Sampras had his own game, but you grew up idolizing Rod Laver, and you often watch tapes of him. What was it that you saw, and what did you try to incorporate in your tennis game?
Well, one thing I liked about Rod was his attitude. He's just a class act, great player. But his game was an all-around court game. He didn't have many holes in his game. He played well on all surfaces and just a smooth, classical player and a serving volleyer, which I love. And I just kind of looked at him as kind of, you know, he was left-handed, kind of a role model of like, wow, he's kind of, you know, try to emulate that. I mean, I'd have my own different game with a little more power, but I think he just kind of represented something that was his class, and I always kind of looked up to that, and just that serve and volley attacking game. The fact that he did it with a lot of style and grace is something that you know is refreshing for me to see at a time where I was growing up watching you know, Connors, Mackinac, Lendo, great players, but just a different personality than mine.
I know a lot of kids, when they're growing up, want to have their parents' support, especially when they're competing in sports. But in your case, your parents got pretty nervous watching you. They didn't come to a lot of your matches, did they?
You know, they didn't really. They liked to kind of leave me on my own, and they supported me. And they came to a few majors. I lost the 92 Open. They were there. And obviously breaking the record with them there was one of the best moments of my life. So they've come, and I've forced them to come. I think my sisters have forced them to come because they do get nervous. They're pretty shy people like myself. They don't like the cameras. They just kind of let me do my thing. And for me, it was nice to not have to worry about tickets and make sure they're getting it okay. It was just I could just focus on my tennis.
Pete, I know when I talked to John McEnroe one time, he took that 6 months off. He said to me, Ron, you know, when I came back off of that 6 months, I wasn't the same player in that I had other things on my mind. I thought about my family. I thought about the kids some of the time instead of strictly on tennis. When you got married in 2000 with Bridget, did your life change to any degree from the tennis perspective?
You know, it really didn't. You know, it was interesting. When I married her, it was at a time in my career that I was really at a crossroad. I broke the record. I lost the U.S. Open final, and it just week in, week out, I just didn't want to dig deep enough. You know, I stayed on top for a lot of years, and I think just the timing of everything made it look like she kind of ruined my career. And if anything, she kind of kept me in the game. You know, at times where I was frustrated, she just said, "Promise me you're going to stop on your own terms," because I was starting to believe some of these things I was reading, and didn't really change my life. I mean, having a kid definitely changed my life. I mean, you know that adjustment, waking up at 6:30 with a poopy hand, you know? You know? Makes me want to come out of retirement. But anyway, you know, and she stuck with me and kind of kept me into it. And then, you know, winning that last U.S. Open, I felt great for her because she took a lot of the blame for me not playing well. And that, you know, that just kind of goes with the territory, but it wasn't that fair. So I, you know, she supported me through some tough times, and we got through it together, and we ended it on my terms.
Well, I got to tell you, I live in an area where Andre Agassi had a home, and I ran into him at the Safeway store in the vegetable department one time, and I looked over at Andre, and he looked over at me, and I looked over at him, and I said, "Can I ask you a question?" Now, I know Andre expected that it was going to be a sports or a question about his tennis. I said, "Can you tell me when the melons are ripe?"
Yeah. He might know. He likes shopping out here at these supermarkets. He likes to cook out here, but... yeah, so he's definitely pretty domesticated, Andre.
Let me ask you another question. One of the nicest evenings I had is when I had a chance to sit down with the Gullicksons, both Tim and Tom, and just talk a little bit of tennis. And I know that Tim certainly was your coach for a period of time, and it struck you very deeply when he passed away. But the relationship between tennis player and coach, I've always been fascinated with, because when you're a highly skilled player, what is it that the coach brings to the game?
You know what a coach brings? You know, I heard Jack Nicklaus mention this, is that you need someone that can see your swing, because you don't know what he looks like, and if there are times where I'm playing and my ball toss is off and I'm standing too far back in the court, it just basically gives you a bird's-eye view of what you're doing out there, because when you're into it, you're just kind of doing, you know, what feels comfortable. And so, you know, a few technical things we worked on, but a lot of strategy and just being able to see my shots and see if he sees something that I don't feel. And it's a huge plus. You know, he gives you a ton of confidence. And Tim and I got to be very, very close friends, and it was tough losing him. But he took me to that next level. He took me to the number one and to winning majors, and he definitely made me into a much better player.
Pete, I know you're not the type of person to look back. You may appreciate the past, but you tend to look forward. What are you looking forward to now in your life?
You know, I'm enjoying my time. I'm playing a lot of golf, and I'm up here in Tahoe playing a golf tournament, which is fun. You know, it's nice to just kind of do whatever you want whenever you want to do it, and that's you know, you've sacrificed a lot over my career to kind of do that, and so it's been fun. But you know, it's just got to the point where I want to start doing some more stuff, maybe in tennis in some sort. But right now, I'm just trying to figure that out.
You know, when I take a look at the young players, and I've been at some junior tournaments, the thing that distresses me a little bit is that I see these guys wailing away at balls, but I don't see the complete all-around game. Is this game just focused solely on power and not on technique?
You know, it's unfortunate, because if you look at the game today and the future of the game, it's a lot of guys that just stay back and throw rocks. And that's why it's refreshing to see kind of Federer, who's got a really good all-around game. He can come in, stay back, And now it's just, you know, guys stay back and just kind of crack it, you know. And that's entertaining to some point, but I've always liked the contrast. But that's the way the game's going. I mean, if you look at Wimbledon, I mean, everybody was staying back. You know, in my era, you know, I threw and volleyed, and that's kind of the way to play on grass, and it's just a different time.
When you take a look at some of the people that you've been able to play golf with over the years, and I've got a list of some of those people, Arnold Palmer, David Duvall, Fred Couples, Paul Azinger, any of the outstanding golf players, what's the commonality of all great golfers?
Great golfer, it's just their swings, their misses aren't, they miss in the right place. The short games, phenomenal short games, chipping and putting. I mean, these guys are so good. I mean, it's like me with a tennis ball and a racket. I could put it wherever I want it. These guys can do it with a golf club. It's a sport that I struggle playing, you know, missing shots here and there. And it's I respect those golfers. I mean, to grind out there for 4.5 hours, it's a lot of work. And playing with those pros, I mean, you really can see the best in the world. And these guys can hit it on a dime. So it's just practice and doing it, starting at a young age. But it's something that I don't really see myself pursuing seriously.
Also, when you see somebody like a Barry Bonds doing what he's doing at his age, does it just amaze you to see that skill level so high still?
Does it surprise me? I'm sorry?
Does it amaze you to see that level so high still?
Yeah, you know what it is? I think it's just more experience. I mean, you look at Barry at the plate. I don't know baseball that well, but he's probably a little bit more patient than he was probably when he was 30. He's probably maybe see the ball a little better. He's in great shape. Unfortunately, I think this is so unfair of getting criticized for all the steroid nonsense. Well, that's another story. But it's just experience. And you look at Andre, who's in tennis, still can play very well because he's got a ton of experience and knows what he's doing out there. He knows his game. Barry's the same way. It's 40. And, you know, I think he's going to break the whole all-time record. So just experience up there. I think he's confident that he's going to hit one out of there if he gets a pitch.
Final question for you, Pete. When you reflect back on your career, I know there's got to be a moment that's kind of emblazoned in your mind that you'll never forget that kind of symbolizes all that you did in tennis, your competitive aspect. What is that moment?
I think the last Open, I think that just kind of really kind of told me that I kind of got through the toughest part of my career. And then through those 2 years when I was struggling and I still felt I could win the Open, people really still didn't get me and understand my game. And they thought I was all washed up. But I always knew I could win it again. And, you know, I just think it was kind of fitting my career. Through my career, no one really kind of could figure me out. And I think that kind of was the icing on the cake where I went through 2 years of not playing well and people thought I should retire to winning the Open. It's like, huh, what happened here? So I think that was kind of a fitting way of my whole career. So I think the last one was the most special, felt vindicated, felt like ended on my terms. I felt really happy about it, and it was nice to end it on top.
Well, I'll tell you, not only from your playing standpoint, but also from a personal and a professional standpoint, the way you reflected Rod Laver and his professionalism as well, I just want to compliment you on that. Pete, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. You're welcome here anytime on Sports Byline. Take care, Pete.
Hey, I also want to say hello to we have our Air Force overseas. I want to wish them luck, and we're all proud of you guys. I want you to come home soon, but I just want to thank you for putting your life on the line for us. So God bless you guys.
Thank you, Pete. Take care.
Thank you.
Champion in every aspect, Pete Sampras. We continue with more of you and America's Sports Talk Show.